We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
Hey, welcome to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, presented by Shelter Insurance. Shelter Insurance for your auto, home, and life. Visit your local agent or find us on the web at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield, we're your shelter. Matt Michaels is alongside. I'm Mike Kelly, and we have a guest, we have a guest, we have a guest. And we what do. A guest, what a guest, what a guest
illustrious,
we have.
Illustrious, yes.
Oh, yeah. It's like, is this Christmas week? Christmas
it
has
must
come.
Be.
Christmas has come early because my friend Brian Smith joins us on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. And as you look at his face, you can tell that he is the longtime wrestling coach.
All right, this is the way it's going to be.
At the University of Missouri. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great.
How's Denise?
She's doing great.
Kids good?
I have the whole family together. So
wow. And you're wasting your time with these two knuckleheads, right?
We have two-a-days at this point, so I'm always here.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we want to cover. We'll eventually get to your team. You and I have known each other since virtually the day you arrived in Columbia, Missouri.
23 years now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Let's go back to the beginning, because I think the statute of limitations are over.
Okay.
I say Dave Tobe, and you say?
I think of, Dave was awesome. He was our strength coach. He did everything. Yeah. You know, when you think of now, he's the head assistant over the Chiefs and all that. But I think of a party at the Tobe House. I think it was Easter.
It was Easter.
It was an Easter party, and there was a lot of staff members there. And I remember, I won't give the administrator's name, but there was a keg, and there were people at the keg, and it was a good time. And I remember I got things that day because I worked it, because we had nothing.
Yeah.
In the early years of Mizzou wrestling, we had nothing. But, you know, we were hanging out on a nice sunny day. It was a Sunday or whatever, and just remember hanging out and saying, man, we need travel bags or we need this. And I ended up getting it at Easter, and it was at Dave's Easter party. But yeah. Dave is awesome. Dave, I got to live with Dave for about 6 weeks of the summer because I had, you know, I still had a house in Syracuse. My family wasn't here. And Dave and Cheryl opened their home, and we became very good friends and still remain that way because of getting to live with him. And that was the summer he moved from strength coach to D-line coach because of Corby Dad's passing, and it was in August, and I remember being at the table and convincing him to go coaching.
Yeah, and I can remember walking down the street because I lived in the same neighborhood as Coach Tobe, just down the street, and we'd go and we'd hang out, and that's where I got a chance to meet you and Denise, and you know the kids at that point in time were, I mean they're
3-2,
they were crawling, I mean crazy. So yeah, it's been a long time. The other thing too that and you mentioned not having anything, so at that point in time, you know, I was working in athletics. Yes. And I can remember having serious conversations, like listening to serious conversations in senior staff meetings after the departure of Wes Roper, like, why do we have wrestling? You heard some of that as you were being hired and going through the interview process, but yet they and Gene McCarter, I think, gets a lot of credit for pushing the ball forward in that regard and opening the doors for you to be able to come to Missouri.
Yeah, because I got the call from Joe Castiglione, who said, "Brian, we're gonna make you an offer here, but I'm not gonna be here. I'm leaving. I'm announcing. Yeah. I'm going to Norman tomorrow." So that was my good and bad of getting hired to Missouri. The guy that I thought was the AD was leaving the next day. And so when I came in, Gene was the interim, but just sat me down and went through it. And that, you know, you're going to have to, he explained that when he was with baseball, you're not going to get everything. You're going to have to find a way. And I'm like, that's why I'm here. I'll figure it out. I'm just happy to have this job. And I look at it as a sleeping giant. So I'm not going to worry about what I don't have. We'll figure that out.
We teased Gene quite a bit about, you know, the longtime baseball coaches. When he moved into administration, you know, still operating on a baseball budget. It's like, come on, Gene, man, you can open up the cash a little bit. You know, we're dying on some of these trips. We need more per diem. We need stuff. But one of the things that I don't think Gary Pinkel gets enough credit for is his ability to not accept no for an answer, right?
Yes.
Because through the process, when you're trying to build things and when you want things like travel bags and things like that, you get told invariably no.
Yep.
But you got to continue to knock on the door and try to bust things down, don't you?
Yes. And without a doubt, you have to. There's going to be a lot of no's and different things like that. But, I mean, we didn't have a facility. We had our facility was the old weight room, and I remember, you know, Norm Stewart coming up to use the practice gym and volleyball coming up to use the practice gym. We shared our offices with the swim team, and I just said, you know what, we can't worry about those things. Let's worry about it. But I remember getting a guy, I forget the professor's name, a computer science teacher or something, to make a graphic design of what the practice basketball gym would look like as a wrestling room. And I hung it up outside my office. So Norm would go by. It was actually after Norm left, and it was Quinn Snyder. And Quinn and his staff would come by, and they'd be like, what's that? I said, oh, that's your gym. And if you guys ever get that, you know, that story that we keep hearing, that dream about this arena that they're talking about, if it ever happens, I want that gym. And so it took a year, and I think it was the sixth year till we really moved into the new practice facility, and then that opened up a locker room, and that opened up now our old wrestling room becoming a weight room. But I think there's a lot of coaches today that are like, man, we don't have the facilities. I'm not coming there, or I'm not going to take that job. And I'm like, well, dang, if you looked at Mizzou back in the day, we didn't have anything. We had no budget. I didn't even my second assistant, Lee Pritz, was making $6,000 and living on my couch. And I just said, come, be my second assistant. We can't pay you full time. Just come, and we'll figure it out. And we did. I just paid him through camps and this and that. And eventually the school said, we got to make him full time. He's working full time. And every other team has a full time assistant like that. You got to. But finding people that'll buy into that and believe in what you're going to do and come and work hard, because eventually people notice that when you're working hard and results start to happen and the culture changes, things will come. And they did. When we started winning, it was recognized, and Alden was very, very good to us. He saw that I'm seeing progress, and how else can we help? And I remember winning the Big 12. And I mean, a lot of people don't know that story. We won the Big 12 and we were homeless.
Yeah.
Because the year we won the Big 12, we left the Big 12. And everybody else in the athletic department was great about it. But I'm like, what the heck are we going to do next year? And we didn't decide what conference we were going to go to till like the end of July or early August.
Wow.
So we were homeless. But my staff and I said, you know, we can worry about that. Eventually we'll find something. Let's just keep recruiting our asses off. And that year we brought in Willie Miklas, Jaden Cox, LaVon Mays, Barlow McGee. It was one of our best recruiting classes at that time, and we were homeless from a conference. That when people say, man, you can't win if you're in the SEC, I hear coaches say that sometimes. It's too competitive there. You can't win there. Well, no. Or you're in the MAC, and you can't win if you're going to be in there. I've never let that bother us. We were in the Big 12, and we were told we couldn't win because Okie State and Oklahoma, and we found a way to win. And it's just your attitude about how you're going to approach it. And I've just always been that way. I grew up in a family with my dad was a coach that way, that – you know, we were always the underdog at the little tiny Catholic school with no money, and we got to figure it out. And he did. That was part of his career, figuring out how to get kids to believe and win. Yeah.
You know, you talk about that, Brian, and I think about where you came from. And, yeah, it's a coaching background. And, you know, the state of Florida seems like an odd place to go from Florida to New York and deal with all those sorts of winters and then find yourself in Columbia, Missouri, and the spot you ended up. Was there ever a time where you thought in this ride, I know where it's headed? Or did you just kind of go, hey, as a coach, as an athlete, I put my head down and what happens, happens? Because it sounds like that's kind of what's happened in the building of your program.
Yeah, but there were some, the first 3 years, if you look at my record, my first 3 years, I look at today how programs fire coaches. But the great thing was my third year, I redshirted Tyron Woodley, Jeremy Spates, J.P. Reese. And I remember looking, going, in the bleachers, I had a better team than the team I was wrestling. But I knew I started a lot of those guys as true freshmen, and they needed this year to develop. It was the third year. We needed to win, and we didn't. We were battling, but I knew that by that year of development with those guys, that fourth year, we were going to come out and be hammers. Now, you can have injuries, things can go wrong, but we were fortunate. That third year, I think the first 3 years, we were like 9-27. And from that fourth year on, we've never lost. We've never had a losing season. We've had that year, we went 18-3. But I do remember sitting after a head coach's meeting and being told to stay by our head AD at the time, Mike Alden, and saying to three or four coaches, hey, you've been given more resources. It's time to win. And I remember looking around going, I feel pretty good about it, but I'll go tell Denise that, who do we know as a realtor right now, just in case. But that's part of this job. But I actually was joking with Denise. She looked at me funny. But that's part of this business. But I feel good about it. We went in the first duel of the year, knocked off a top 10 team in Illinois on the border that had blown us out for 3 years. And from that, we beat five Big Ten teams that year, beat Nebraska for our first Big 12 win. And it was like, boom, we went 18-3, ranked high in the country. And from that year forward, I think we brought in Ben Askrens and Matt Pels, and the recruiting started to pick up. And it's just, but even now, I can tell you, 2 years ago, it was, I think, 2 years ago or two or three, we were frustrated because we finished fifth in the country. So now I'm taking you into the room in our 20th season, and I have all my staff, from my team doctor, Dr. Tarbucks, that's been with me for 20 years, to my trainers, to my coaches, to my administrators, to everybody that works with the program. There's like 10 or 15 of us. We sit in that back room at D. Rose. It's like a 3-4 hour lunch, and we discuss everything about the program. They come in, it's 2 weeks after the season, and they come in with all sorts of stuff on how we can improve. Mm-hmm. And everybody contributes. And the big topic that year was, we never bring in big recruits, blue chips, this and that. And I'm like, well, we're developing someone. I said, Jaden Cox was the blue chip. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I do rebuttal with things, but I do say, yeah, we don't bring in the multiple amount of them. So the big discussion for over an hour that day was, how can we do this? How can we all work together and make this happen? And if you look at the recruiting class we brought in this past year, was from that discussion. How can we figure this out and make it happen? How can we get a kid like Josh Edmond out of Detroit Catholic to not go to a Michigan school, come all the way to Mizzou? And how do we get Keegan O'Toole not to go to Wisconsin, come to Missouri as a number one recruit, and keep, you know, Rocky Elam, who's the number one kid in the country out of Missouri, keep him here, you know, and keep him home? And it all came together, and now the class is, you know, I looked at the black and gold results last night. Unbelievable, the true freshmen, what they were doing. We had two or three true freshmen winning over experienced guys or in battles with experienced guys that, you know, the experience we have in the upper class with this class is going to make for a great future.
How many years have the finals been in St. Louis?
I lost count. I think this year will be either the eighth or ninth time since, and that's right. In my 23 years that we've hosted.
And let me make the point, because I've said this, and I don't mean to embarrass you, because I've said it to you, and I've said it publicly. And as someone who represents my company on the board of directors with the St. Louis Sports Commission, I know how much that event means to the region.
Yes.
That event does not have the success that it's had in St. Louis without the efforts of Brian Smith and the tireless work that Brian Smith and his group of people do to sell tickets and to raise awareness and to get people in the building and also make sure things are right when the teams arrive. And I've said this to you, and again, I've said it publicly many times, there is no head coach, none, at the University of Missouri that does more to promote his team and to promote his sport than Brian Smith.
Well, I appreciate that, but I know of some great coaches here and that are doing some great things that it only helps me. So I appreciate what you're saying, but I also know there's been some great ones.
Well, and I'm not saying that there haven't been. Yeah, and I'm not saying that there haven't been, and that's not to indict anybody else.
Right.
But the level of detail and effort that I've witnessed go through over 23 years.
Door-to-door selling tickets.
Yeah, no question. You're not ashamed to do it.
I want to get people in the seats.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's look. Look at your crystal ball. When the tournament happens, the national tournament happens in St. Louis.
Yeah. What's going to happen?
What's going to happen?
Well, right now we have to have a certain percentage of our sports still having the sport. And I feel good that we're going to have the last thing was what the percentage has to be for us to have a 33-man bracket, 330 qualifiers at the 10 weights, and I feel good about it. The Ivies did cancel, but since the Ivies have canceled, there's been really no other teams. There are a few smaller schools that might opt out, but we would have to lose close to 20 or 30 teams for us to not have the 33-man bracket. So you asked me today, I feel pretty good that we're going to have a 33-man bracket. Don't know how many fans.
Yeah.
They're not going to announce it till January. They're actually waiting because the NCAA, they only have a few sports that make money in championships. Mm-hmm. Now, football is not counted in that. Obviously, basketball does. But the few other sports, such as ice hockey and wrestling and do draw unbelievable crowds and have great sponsorship, and it does great. And ESPN wants to cover it in prime time, so So they're waiting on wrestling, I know, because they're hoping that they can bring in more fans than if it's right now it's 20%. They're hoping by March, the end of March, that it can be more because I've had so many calls for tickets already from Mizzou fans that we usually sell about 800 to 1,000 of the 19,000 seats. And I could sell more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they have to spread it between the close to 80 schools. And that doesn't include the general public then, too, that they could sell. Last year, they had sold 35,000 tickets, all session tickets, to the event when it was going to be at the Minnesota's football stadium, that new dome.
Yeah.
And it got canceled. But we had sold 35,000 all session tickets.
Wow.
And this was a couple weeks before the event, that it would have probably sold, been in the close to 40 for the whole thing, 40,000 people for 3 days.
When you mention things like that, and I agree with Mike, you are tireless in how you promote not just your program but the sport. It's a sport that has had some challenges in recent years with people moving conferences, not least of which yours, trying to find the right balance to make it a success as it is so much for so many people, but also to broaden that community. What do you think is most important going forward in doing that? Because you're somebody who's never said no and never not taken a risk when it comes to promoting the sport of collegiate folkstyle wrestling.
It's funny because my sons are and my daughter, all of them will end up, one of my youngest graduates from Mizzou, and one is working on, my oldest is working on his MBA, went to the business school. My daughter graduated from the TAM program, which is a business-type degree in textile, and then my youngest is in the sports management, and so they're taking marketing classes and doing that, and I said, Dad's never had a marketing class. My marketing class has been 30-something years of coaching wrestling, and I've had to learn how to market. Unfortunately, I had to learn through the process that this isn't going to work, but I think it's knowing your identity. And I talk about this to my team, to my coaches, that knowing your identity on how you want to recruit. And when I see coaches come here, I know kind of in the back of my mind which coaches are going to do well when I hear what their process is going to be and how they're going to recruit, and they have a philosophy of it. And it's knowing your identity. And with me, I know we're not going to be the primetime network, on all the big shows and the ESPN primetime matches. But our identity is through social media. And we've talked about this before we even went on today, that we have, you know, our Facebook following is just broke 30-something thousand. And I want to grow it. I want to get it to 40, 50,000. And the people following, so it's being on social media through Twitter, through Facebook, that we're a niche sport. You got to know that. And promoting things. Our Black and Gold made money last night off of our Rockfin account. People got into a battle of tipping on it and giving actual tips. You know, Matt Manley was doing the broadcast with Bo Bayman, and they were, you know, recognizing people, and it became a battle. But knowing that and getting the community, and you got to really sell it to your wrestling community. But then when I go out, I will speak at any event that Mizzou offers, and it is tiresome. But I will speak in Kansas City and St. Louis and whatever small town they're doing talks in, and I will get out there and. It'll be two or three people will say, we're going to come to a wrestling match. We heard you talk, heard about your team. We know we have success. I've never been to one. But by me going out there, it brings those people from those towns or cities, and they'll come out and watch, and it grows the fan base. So it's knowing that, knowing your identity, that you have to get out and meet people and drag them, make your neighbors go to matches, and find a way to, whether it's the day of the state tournament, and saying we're going to have a duel in between the session at the state tournament, then 6,000 people are at a duel paying to be there. So it's knowing how can you get people in the seats and working at it and constantly growing your program, and people know our program, and we all, you know, we're one of the few that has its own brand. That Tiger Style is a brand, and and it's a. I didn't learn this in marketing, but I've learned it on the way, and now I actually speak to companies about branding your company, having a philosophy, and what Tiger Style, how it develops a culture of success, and with that I get paid at those things, and it's a fundraiser for our program. So it's I've found ways that I didn't. It just kind of fell into them. But developing our program and knowing my identity, getting it out there, selling it, and it's now helping the program.
When do you think the state embraced Missouri wrestling?
The state embraced?
When did the state of Missouri and its wrestling, and yeah, the wrestling community in the state of Missouri embrace your program?
It was difficult because actually when I came in, I had one of my first recruits' mom I called when I first took the job, and she asked me if Missouri was Division I, and her son was coming here. And I'm like, wow. We have a long way to go. We wrestled matches on a track with maybe 100 bleacher seats around it. And I could tell you every person in the stand who they were. You know, there's Mike Kelly. There's, you know, and I could go through and I knew everybody that attended the match. But knowing that we were going to have to grow from that point, it was getting out there. I remember doing, and I was told this, by a successful coach. He's retired now. Bill Ernesty was the head coach of Park Hill, one of the success. I went out and did free clinics for teams and just getting out and getting in front of them, not saying, hey, you're going to have to pay me $1,000 to come do a clinic. I just went out and did it. And being at one of those clinics in the early days, a few years later, he called me and he said, I got this young kid, Alan Waters. I want him to wrestle for you. I heard you. I would go. I have done every coach's clinic I get invited to and ask to go in Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey, Georgia, whatever. And every time I work a coach's clinic, I have coaches come up to me and go, I love your philosophy. I love the way you coach. But they don't know who I am. By doing that, I've gotten a kid to come from Pennsylvania, to come from Georgia, to come from, and you have to get out there. It's a constant, you know. I think Mike Alden had the line years ago. He said, "We're always on. If you're not always on, you're not going to be successful in this work." You know, and if you don't want to work at it constantly, I get yelled at home that, "Are you listening to me?" My wife will say, and I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm thinking about something. I'm focused now. I have to sometimes turn it off when I'm in certain, but you have to be on. And want to be on more and find ways to get people to come to your program. Yeah. So it was probably the Illinois duel, but probably that first really where the state said, holy crap, was we're here, we've arrived. When we beat Oklahoma State at Hazelwood East High School, it was a packed gym, over 3-something thousand packed in there. We beat the number one team in the country, returning national champs, Oklahoma State, and it was unbelievable that – I tell that story many a time. There were people coming up to me in tears saying I thought I'd never – we were 0-1 whatever against Oklahoma State, had never even had a close duel, knock them off that day. And since that point, we've beaten them, I think, 6 or 7 times, and it's become a great rivalry. John and I still, you know, have kept it going since we left the Big 12. That match still continues to draw great crowds and is the big match on our schedules at home. And it's become a great rivalry. Where it was when I started at Mizzou, he was bringing his backups and, you know, giving it as a week off for them. So,
yeah, he also used to say that a couple of things Alden would say is let's make sure that none of us are caught at the salad bar at Schnucks with our pants down because of information that wasn't communicated internally.
Yes.
Yeah, that was one. And then the other thing that I've always thought applied so appropriately, and he lived it, right, and you witnessed it, is you can't – in college athletics, you can't do your job from behind your desk.
Yes.
In Columbia, Missouri. And so thus created the outreach program that he and I went to 114 counties over a three-year period. And that's really when you truly get a chance to get a sense of what a Mizzou fan truly is and really the footprint of what this program means to outstate Missouri, too.
So. And it's not just – and you say the desk, and I know that's just a term, but it's – for me, it's getting to know the coaches here and learning from them. And I remember in my early years saying, our football program staff all just – when they just brought in Pinkel. I was already here a couple of years, and I'm like – they're doing it. What was it? The champagne idea with the beer budget or whatever.
Yeah.
They had the Mac mentality. They came from the Mac, and they were in the at that point it was the Big 12. And I remember what was it? David, he was running all their recruiting. The guy with the
Yost. Yeah.
He was running all their recruiting. And I remember sitting down with him. I said, "Hey, can we pick your brain for about a half an hour or so?" And he's like, "Come on over." And they went through. They had a couple other people in the room telling us things they were doing recruiting-wise and mailers and this and that. And it blew me away. It's like, God, we could do so much more.
Right.
We can't do it at that level, but there's things I can take from that and learn. It's the same thing from learning from your leadership, that there's been great leaders here that I've had, you know, from Sarah Reisman was my, you know, oversaw our team for like 19 years, to now I have Tammy and Jim being here, to Alden, that I have to learn things from them and pick their brains too. And it's just, I just think it's, if you're not doing that, learning things from people like we have, then you're not using your time wisely.
I agree.
And one of the things I learned from different leaders that I've met is about reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like to read when I started. And I pick on the young employees that are in marketing and ticketing and all that, and especially the marketing people. I'll be like, "What book are you reading right now?" And they'll be like, "Oh, I'm not reading." And usually young people, that's the response. I'm like, "So you're not reading ideas on things on how to market?" And I'll be reading and I'll be like, "Look at this book. This is all about marketing. I'm a wrestling coach. What do you think?" That happened to me. What are you reading? Alden would send books to us with notes in them. And I know most of the ADs that I've had here, which has been a few, have provided books. We've had guest speakers come in and talk about things. So you're always learning. And if you're not, the day I stop learning is the day you'll see, you know, the back of me and I'll be walking out the door. So
Mizzou wrestling coach Brian Smith with us on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast presented by Shelter Insurance. You know, as we take a look forward into this season for you and for your team, I imagine just the logistics of a regular year to get to this point were very interesting. A lot of quads, a lot of multi-team events. What is that lead up to one of those events going to look like for you? And is it much of an adjustment at all for your team?
It's definitely an adjustment, but we've been doing like the COVID testing since I think September now, and they had to do some to lift in the summer in August and June and July. So about half our team was here since June. A lot of them have been here since August and training. So my team is at a point right now that they've gotten used to the COVID testing, gotten used to being put in quarantine, and if they've tested positive, knowing what they have to do, and that it's become a part of the norm, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we're 10 days out and we're in really good shape. We didn't have everybody wrestling in the black and gold last night, and some of it was coming off of a quarantine or coming off of an injury, and there's just no reason for some of our All-Americans to be wrestling in wrestle-offs right now. But I feel like, wow, with the talent we have, it's one of the – and I get excited about every season, but what we have right now in our program – I'm excited. I'm like off the charts excited, like that fourth year excited when I knew I'm bringing these guys off redshirt. I'm bringing, you know, some true freshmen that have performed at a level in high school and performed a month ago at a freestyle winning national titles. And then what we have returning that didn't get to wrestle at the nationals, all these qualifiers and kids that were All-Americans that – we have a lot, and the kids know it too, that the competition in our room is unbelievable, that they just cannot wait to get on the mat and compete. The stress of it is that the people out, you know, that I'm talking to right now, the fans out there, is they don't see the stress of an athlete. Not only do we have the, you know, they're cutting weight, they're going to have the scale, which is different than any sport. They have to go to the scale before a competition, which is an hour before competition. They also have to deal with a COVID test now. And not only worrying about, you know, they know I'm not going to test positive, but what if my teammate does? What if my roommate does? Or what if my room, you know, or a coach does, and I or my workout partner, all those things, or the other team, and we're not going to have the match. So it's that stress that the athletes, that we've tried to tell them, don't just, you know, we can't control that. Let's just go do it and hope it all turns out and we get matches. But it does add some added things that, you know, we have a couple Pac-12 teams that we have to weigh in the same day of competition. So not only three tests during the week, the fourth is going to be the day of competition. So we could have a team test positive that, or something happened where they shut the competition down, and we've driven to Fargo, North Dakota. So it's that it's those unknowns that are going to add some unwanted stress on athletes, coaches, losing sleep, you know, just worrying about things other than just being a wrestling coach. And so I think that's the part. And I kind of saw it, and I'm very observant watching what other sports are going through with the fall. What I did notice is the wearing on some athletes and coaching staffs, and not saying this is Mizzou, throughout the country, teams just saying, man, I don't want to, or kids just saying, man, I'm tired. I want the season to be over with. It's, you know, because of all the extra things. And are we going to, you know, play football? Are we going to play soccer, volleyball? No, we're not playing this week. Now it's going to be scheduled a different day. That's difficult on the athletes with your training cycles and things.
We're going to cut you loose with this. We lost a friend, Dr. Ed Lampett, passed away. And he was a guy that was not only a terrific person, but someone that was dear to you, and also someone that your program meant a lot to.
Unbelievable person, you know, and I would go to breakfast with him and Coach Whitney, and they were the first undefeated team here, and they always reminded me of that. You know, Hap was the coach, and Ed was the captain of that team. I think it was the 1967 team, but unbelievable people to this program, because they would come and meet with me, they would come and watch practice, they were constantly around the program. Ed was just the, you know, what he did for wrestling here and promoting it, but just what he did for the university, just and what he had to overcome with, you know, with his stroke and what he did at 30-something years old, and then still learned to fly, still learned to be a dentist and have a career of that.
Played golf.
And did everything that when I would tell the guys on the team the story, and he's up there at practice and, you know, and but we had an award named after him, and it was the Total Tiger, and because he was it. He was the total. I think he was the president of the Varsity M, and nonstop.
Yeah.
And then this is in his 60s and 70s, doing these things that was the person, but just truly cared, really cared. He would sit with me at those breakfasts with Hap, and they would want to know about each of the guys and what are some of their family problems and this and that. And so when he – I mean, he was struggling when I got the what was it? I'm trying to think of the award. What award was it in the summer I got the other day?
You've gotten so many.
But he called me and he said, Brian, congratulations on the award, and I'm going to be there. And he had just done chemo treatments. And I'm like, Ed, you don't have to be there. And this is the type of person he is that he's like, no, I'm going to be there. And his wife called me, what time is it and what time? And he really, you know, and he shows up. And to me, that meant the world to me, that he felt like he needed to be there for me. And that's the type of person. I'm very, you know, blessed that wrestling people are that way. They really care. And I'm not saying other programs, but since I've been at Missouri in the first year, I've had a group of people like that has grown, and it keeps growing. But I've had people like that that care about the program, not just to be successful, but about the kids in the program and wanting it to do well. And what he did for me and helping me through times and helping me get through the early years and continuing to help. So that's Ed Lampett and why he's so special to our program.
Yeah, such a genuine person. Brian, thank you. I'm so proud of you, man. And it's such a great for me, it's an honor just to call you a friend, and your family think the world of Denise, obviously. And we've known each other for a long time. So I just, I know you continue to plug away. I know you guys continue to work hard, and I hope you realize your dream really, really soon.
Well, thank you. Get out to the matches, people. Yeah,
absolutely.
We can have 800-900 of them. I want 800-900 people. We had our black and gold last night. It was so quiet. I hate it. We need people in there.
Yeah, that's because they hear you, right? You know, you got to watch.
I don't want to be heard.
Hey, bud, thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, that's Brian Smith, Missouri's wrestling coach. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast presented by Shelter Insurance.
Today is the day. After countless hours of research, cutting back expenses, and 9 months of anxiously waiting for her, today is the day you finally bring home your new car. It's also the day to protect her with an auto policy from Shelter Insurance. Our policies are competitively priced and include new car replacement coverage if anything were to happen to your new baby.
To find an agent near you, visit shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
Always great to catch up with Brian Smith. Again, a guy that works so tirelessly trying to promote his program and doing whatever he can to help teach his kids not only the aspects of wrestling, the fundamentals of life and how they can succeed.
Well, and you heard about the brand with Tiger Style, and that is a life philosophy. I mean, it's you might be self-selecting, right? You might be finding athletes who want to buy into it, but there's always something you can learn. And in my interaction with the student athletes that Brian Smith has had a chance to impact as head coach, you always see that. There's always something there that comes to commitment, that comes to plugging away. And you can hear it in the way that he describes how he promotes his program, how he wants to move forward in life. And you talked about the ultimate goal. It's still out there. And that NCAA championship, for me, for my money, that comes to that mindset at some point. It's been close. I think they've got a heck of a class in that can maybe realize that with a lot of hard work. And it would probably be another story that people right now in the college wrestling field would be like, yeah, it's certainly possible, but would you see it coming with the way the Big Ten has blown up and kind of swallowed everything whole in there? But they're going to do it. I think the mindset is there that someday we'll see that happen. And when that day comes, it's going to be a pretty cool day.
Yeah, I had a chance to fly up to Detroit a few years back with Mike Alden and others in the administration to watch the Saturday evening matches. There's nothing like it.
It's
there's
insane.
There's nothing like it in sport, you know, when you have all the individual titles being contested on a Saturday night in the center of the arena. And by the way, they're working hard upstairs, if you can't tell by the background noise. But anyway, it's a cool deal. I'm glad it's in St. Louis, and I hope that that our friend Brian Smith gets to raise a championship trophy sometime soon. We got a lot to talk about, yeah. Right? I think we still think there's going to be a bowl game.
As
of right now, Iowa shut things down. There was a story in the Des Moines Register this morning about maybe difficult for them to resume activities just based on positivity rate. And again, this is somewhat speculation, conjecture until it's actually proven. So we'll see. But, you know, heck of a challenge for Missouri to go to an underhand Missouri team, right, without Borum, without Bolton. Who knows if anybody else is going to opt out between now and December the 30th. But, you know, they're facing an Iowa team that coached by a terrific coach in Kirk Ferentz. They've won six consecutive games, and they've just throttled their opponents by an average of 22.
I think of Iowa, and I always think of a team that can get you right where Missouri, the last couple of weeks, honestly, Mike has hurt, which is in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
They can go right after you. And they will challenge you there, as you have said many times.
Oh, it's a challenger manhood game.
Yeah. Yeah. And for Missouri, I think they can be up to that challenge. But hearing Coach Drinkwitz after the game in Starkville, he kind of said, man, we might be a little bit worn out. I think the time off is very helpful for Missouri here. Get a lay of the land and a reassessment. And I think there's an extra challenge now knowing that Iowa has taken things on a pause, right? Because you're preparing for a game. Will that game end up being against the Iowa Hawkeyes? I guess that's an open question, right? I mean, you could find someone else. UAB had their opponent in a bowl not be able to answer the bell. And so does UAB end up being an opponent at large for some team in bowl season? I mean, 2020's caused so many crazy things. Maybe that would be the next sort of story. But I do think that if Missouri takes that and says, okay, who's the team that Missouri can focus on? It's Missouri. And using these days to get right and then get to the bowl game and put out the best effort. I think we said it a few weeks ago here on the podcast, Mike. The season was already a success for Eli Drinkwitz and company in year one. But you can just put extra things out there to make it more visible, more known. And a bowl win would do that. It's part of the goals of the team. I think that's why Coach Drinkwitz and company really want to play it, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, it's always good to finish with a winning record, to be 6-5 as opposed to 5-6. It's always good to beat a team from a named conference like the Big Ten. It's always good to be a team that's perennially ranked, a perennial top 25 team. Easy for me to say. I'm glad I don't buy flowers and try to get perennials. But, you know, it's one of those deals that there's so much upside if you can play the game, right, and if you could win the game in particular. But the season has been a success to the degree that anybody would want. I mean, you know, Eli Drinkwitz isn't satisfied, right, and that's very – and that's why he's successful, right? I remember asking him a couple of – maybe it was last Thursday that the weeks kind of run together. It was last Thursday after signing day. Is, you know, were you satisfied with class? I'm never satisfied. I'm just keeping it real. And so, you know, that's the type of mentality like a Bryan Smith that's going to lead him, I think, to many, many good things here at Mizzou. Mississippi State game, disappointing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to lose to a 2-7 team, but you didn't play well. You got beat by a team that played better, number one. Number two, you were down in terms of numbers. But you know what you found out? You found out that there's this kid named Sean Robinson who has the heart as large as anybody in that program and who, you know, is the true definition of the word program guy or team player. Whatever he can do to get on the field to help his team, and he did so at a pretty high level, too.
And he helped his team, and if Mizzou fans wondered – right? In this age where if you have the letters QB on the side of your name, let's face it, you want that opportunity. Sean Robinson, I'm sure, want that opportunity. He had it at the start of the season. It didn't work out. But instead of saying, man, I'm going to move around, he said, I like it here. I like what's going on. I want to help. And now Sean Robinson's a safety by his telling and by Eli Drinkwitz's telling. And guess what? He's probably a pretty darn good safety, too.
Probably in the two deep.
Because if you can go out and play the way that he did, whether it was short numbers to give him the opportunity or whatever, it was 5 tackles, 2 on his own, the half tackle for loss, he had a breakup, and then he had that amazing individual effort on the interception. He showed a nose for the football. He showed a willingness to get in there, which I'm not sure everybody going from that position, a quarterback to safety, just like that at the turn of a hat would do. And he definitely showed that he was about his talk. Like, if he told his coaches, I want to get on the field and I want to help, he wasn't just talking about it, he was acting. And I agree with you. I think that's a two-deep safety right now for the University of Missouri, and he'll have an impact there. And what a luxury for that to be able to happen, and what a testament to him and his want to get it done.
Yeah, so the team has a little break. They're you know, getting a chance to go home for Christmas and then come back and get back after it coming up this weekend. Meanwhile, basketball, 6-0. Coach Stewart used to say, and I don't know if you heard me say this last night, mm-hmm. pardon the redundancy if you did, but he used to say that you win some, you lose some, and every once in a while, one washes up on the beach. And last night might have fallen under the third category, but, you know, to be down by 8 with 3:37 to play and to come back and win it on a 3-point play by Jeremiah Tillman with 1 second to go, I think speaks to the maturity of this Mizzou basketball team.
Well, I'll do you one further. To be down 8 with 3:37 to play in a game that was scoring in the 50s,
yeah.
Tops.
Yeah.
I mean, that feels like a gulf too wide, right? When you're shooting as poorly as Missouri did. I asked the Mizzou statistician extraordinaire, Tom Orff, last night, in a win, what was the worst field goal percentage for Missouri? And I think at last check, he could go back 20 years. They beat the Ruse of UMKC in a game in 2006, shooting 37%. And Missouri shot a little bit over 25% in that game and found a way to win. That's a game that teams that are top 15 in the country at home, they just find a way.
Yeah.
And Missouri, I think, earned it in basketball people's minds, that top 15 ranking, as much last night as they did when they played the Fighting Illini, because they showed they could win a game like that where nothing was going right. And they got hit in the mouth by a Bradley team that wanted to defend, probably knew that if they got this game on their non-conference resume, they start talking their way into maybe an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. And Missouri took that best shot that Bradley could give them, and found a way, and that is very impressive.
I'll spot your number with this number. Mark Smith, Xavier Pinson, Drew Smith. 7 for 28 from the field, and you still win.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows you there's a little depth as well. And that's a Bradley team that's picked to finish third in the Valley. You know, the layoff was clearly visible. Konzo did say afterwards that he thought that maybe they should have scrimmaged more, did more game-type settings. That's all things that the coaches do. They're gonna look back at every piece of the way that they handled this time period. But, again, for them to be able to find a way to use defense to come back and win on a night when their offense wasn't very good, you know, credit Bradley for their effort, but credit Missouri for, you know, its competitive nature.
Yeah, and you think it has to go perfect, right? If you're down 8 late in that sort of game, well, it didn't go perfectly. Mm-hmm. There was that 30 or 29-second possession where X Pinson gets caught with an ankle in the wrong place and ends up tripping a Bradley player,
right,
and it takes away what would have been a turnover,
right,
on a great defensive possession.
Yeah.
You have Mark Smith with what a lot of fans, I think, thought was the final shot Missouri would have, going for three, and it didn't turn out. But Mizzou made 6 of their 7 foul shots in that final 3 minutes and change, and Bradley went 1 for 4.
Mm-hmm.
They left the door open, right? And what Missouri did was not panic to it. After they went down 8, they called a 30-second timeout. Mitchell Smith gets a turnaround jumper in the lane, and then he get an offensive foul to get it the other way, and you could start to see slowly the traction continue, and they didn't give up on that game at any point.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've seen a Missouri team that would have been capable of pulling that off the way they did at home under those circumstances. And I don't think we've seen a Mike for several seasons in Columbia. I can't recall a team, maybe that great 2012 team, that would have been able to do it the way they did with the chips stacked against them, and that was a very mature-type win. And you come out of that feeling like $1 million, right? You feel alive because someone tested you. And now I think all the momentum in the world, if they can keep their wits about them, against Tennessee in this SEC season opener.
Yeah, that's a top, you know, Missouri's 14, Tennessee's in the top 10, depending on what happens this week with the polls. I mean, could it be a matchup of top 10 teams? Yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but yeah, that's a fun opportunity. And then, of course, Arkansas coming up on the 2nd, so now the games start to move in a hurry once you're into conference play, providing that you can, you know,
play them all and on time.
All. Exactly. Auburn's got a coach.
Yeah.
Good hire. You know, the conjecture was is that this is Auburn being Auburn, you know, as they were going through their search and you kept hearing different names. But I like the hire of Brian Harsin. I think it's – and I like the offensive creativity. It's interesting, though, you know, is it, you think about the time that Eli Drinkwitz spent with Brian Harsin at Boise State, and others certainly within the program – worked for Coach Harse at Boise State, and so now he's in the league. I think that's a really good hire.
Yeah, I think it is. It is one that if you get wrapped up in the day to day of a search, if you're an Auburn fan or an SEC fan, might look like it was harried. But Brian Harsin's of the quality that I think he should be on just about anybody's list. Really, mm-hmm. I mean, to continue what had been built there at Boise and keep it at that level of competition cannot be easy, and I agree with you. In an SEC and in a college football landscape that is trending towards the offense, you better have somebody with that in mind. And I think that on the plains, probably in much the way when Gus Malzahn came in and it was like, all right, prove it to us, right? Well, what did he do right from the start? Gus Malzahn started to prove it and bought himself a lot of capital there. But when you play college football in the state of Alabama and you're looking at number one, and you're not even number one once in a while, and that's what had happened the last few years, that's what occurs. I think Gus Malzahn, if he wants, will have a job somewhere in college football very, very quickly. But if they're going to make a move, they can make worse moves than getting Brian Harsin.
He's got 21 million reasons to take a year off.
He can take that vacation in whatever way he wants. Yeah. I mean, if I was out there in the world of college football, and I had a way to try to convince him, like, hey, do you have some language in there that says you got to find a job? Find a job with me. I can think of worse people to have on your staff than Gus Malzahn, that's for sure.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what Coach Malzahn wants to do. And, of course, I know where you're going because of the previous relationship. What else captured your attention this past week since – actually 2 weeks. I haven't seen you in this setting in a couple of weeks. So what else is
The
tip of your tongue?
Man, the Ohio State thing, I don't like it. I don't like the teams that only get to play six games go to the playoff.
Yeah, I know, but you knew they were going to take care of the Big Ten.
I know.
Where is the chairman of the College Football Playoff Committee from?
The Big Ten.
The University of Iowa.
Yeah. And I get it. They make all these moves. They find a way within their membership. And in a pandemic year, your knowledge about what's going on with the virus changes, and I understand all that, but just at a base level, if Alabama put itself through 11 football games and Texas A&M put itself through, eight football games in the end, whatever else, and Ohio State didn't have to do that, and against the two teams that could really challenge them, the two nationally ranked type teams, they struggled. To me, that's only a matter of time as the games get more difficult, and if you had played a more full schedule, to see blemishes on that resume. And it's not like anybody in the Pac-12, Mike, was ever expecting to make the playoff this year.
No, they knew
they didn't have a chance before it began. So they said, you know what? We get to play football in 2020. That's great. But I guess when you're protecting a team that's got talent, it's what it feels like to me anyways.
Yeah, I get it. And it does bug me, you know. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, remember when Missouri won Armageddon and beat Kansas and moved to number one in the country, and Mizzou fans were like, Orange Bowl, Orange Bowl, Orange Bowl, can't wait to go to the Orange Bowl. And then you play in the Big 12 championship and you get absolutely boat raced by Oklahoma. The moral of the story is don't get boat raced by Oklahoma. That's why Kansas ends up in the Orange Bowl and Missouri drops to wherever we dropped that year. I think it was San Antonio. I can't even remember.
Well, that was the Cotton Bowl year.
Cotton Bowl. Okay, so the Cotton Bowl, Tony Temple had a historic day, and we go from there. If you're Texas A&M, don't get boat raced by Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get in the playoff, don't get boat raced by Alabama.
And Alabama was doing a lot of racing, but there were only two teams that didn't. And it was Ole Miss early with offense against an Alabama defense that by the end of the year would not have let that happen,
right,
I think.
Right.
And then Florida, which maybe had the best 1-2 combo in the country with their two Kyles, with Trask and Pitts. And those were the teams that could push Alabama this season. And maybe one of these teams in the playoff will. Man, I don't see it happening. I think that if Bama takes care of their business, they're going
right
through. I just
thought that there were two teams that the committee was going to take care of. I thought Notre Dame was one, despite the fact they got absolutely blown out by Clemson in the ACC championship game. And I thought they were going to take care of Ohio State. It just felt that way going in.
Well, and if it was a year with a lack of a different option, I'd have felt differently. But by the numbers, Cincinnati's a really good team. They can play defense. And I know we can talk about strength of schedule and strength of record, and that's all well and good. And maybe at the finish, that would not have been enough anyways. But you're an undefeated conference champion in the best conference that is not one of the Power Five, Autonomy Five, whatever you want to say. And it's the middle of a pandemic. If not now, when is it ever going to happen, absent an expanded playoff and a rule that says one of those teams gets its shot? I think it would be better for the sport if we saw those types of teams get a shot.
I think Illinois made a good hire, by the way, in Brett Bielema. I really do. And the reason why I say this, he's an Illinois native from Prophetstown. He had success as a head coach at Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he took over from an established program from Barry Alvarez, so that helped. And I think the other thing that helps him in Champaign is the expectations are more realistic than they ever were in Fayetteville.
Yes, 100%.
And so, does he have work to do? Absolutely, he's got work to do. But I think for that program at this time, I think by Josh Whitman, that's a pretty good hire.
And I think, too, that Brett Bielema will not lack for energy and creativity in getting people back to that program.
Right. He's the one that once called the Battle Line Trophy presented by Shelter Insurance. He once called it a little squatty three-technique tackle. That's what he called the Battle Line Trophy, and that was the year that they won it, because it's such a massive piece of artwork.
There's a reason that you got to drag it around in a cart until a team can pick it up, because you need two or three people to pick it up. He'd probably try to clean it himself.
Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast presented by Shelter Insurance. Shelter Insurance for your auto, home, and life. Visit your local agent or find us on the web at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter. Of course, the Battle Line rivalry continues on January the 2nd when Missouri and Arkansas play in basketball. And their head coach is out the next game, Eric Musselman, because of COVID testing.
Didn't go in the game on Tuesday night against Abilene Christian, I think it was, just unavailable. Mm-hmm. I guess they had him on the telecast on the SEC network for about a half, which was very fascinating when you get a head coach looking from afar at his team mm-hmm. and going, well, here's what I'd like to do. Here's what I wish we were doing probably. I do wonder if Eric Musselman will be a part of that game on the sidelines against Missouri and if that has any impact at all. The Hogs are feeling pretty good about themselves. They're 8-0. So, oh, yeah, by the way, Missouri, regardless of what happens against Tennessee, you've got one of the teams that can give you trouble in Arkansas in the league that's right thereafter. So it's not like anybody did the Tigers any favors to start, but I feel like with how Konza Martin scheduled the non-conference, yeah. Mike, I don't think he'd want it any other way than this.
Right, yeah, and then one of the players that joined Arkansas during the offseason, the transfer from Indiana, the graduate transfer, Justin Smith, has helped them too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if the only thing you'd want to do different, maybe play a couple more games, maybe try to get maybe have been able to get that Prairie View game in, maybe the Tarleton State game, if you could have found a game on that Monday before mm-hmm. the Friday, just to have something to break up the time between the 10 days between the Illinois game and the Bradley game. But, you know, hey, 6-0, you know, ranked 14th in the country, and probably moving up. Fun deal.
Fresh legs.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
What are you going to do for Christmas?
Christmas Eve is looking like an at-home, low-key affair. Christmas Day might be with just one or two family folks outside of St. Louis. What about yourself?
We've got 17 or 18 people coming. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, very low-key. Just Lori, myself, and Megan just hanging out here in Como. So enjoy your Christmas holiday.
You too.
Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast presented by Shelter Insurance. Shelter Insurance for your auto, home, and life. Visit your local agent or find them on the web, shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter. We're out. Merry Christmas, everybody, and happy holidays.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly. Brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.